Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Well, hello, everybody, and surprise! I am currently on a podcast hiatus, and I was not planning to release one this Friday, but surprise, surprise, happy surprise, we had a major milestone this week. The podcast hit 2 million downloads, and I just couldn't let it go. I couldn't ignore that incredible milestone. It's been almost 3 years that the podcast has been actively up every single Friday for you guys. And I am just so thrilled that it's reaching people all over the world. I read the podcast reviews and I'm just continually floored, and my heart just expands every time I read how this is changing your guys' lives and how it is affecting people's health, both their physical health, of course, but also their mental health and their anxiety and depression and ability to get pregnant and so many different things that I've been hearing from you guys. So thank you for continuing to reach out, and thank you for getting us to 2 million downloads. So I'm here today to offer up a reprise of the episode Toxic Perfectionism. It's one of the most popular episodes of the podcast, and also the reason I picked it is it's a really good rundown of the foundational work that I teach. It goes over the fact that we have to believe and do the work and practice patience and kindness for ourselves. And it just explains the work in a nice way, as is reflected through so many of our struggles, one of which is we tend to be toxic perfectionists. We tend to want to do everything right. And of course, that's not always the answer, because in the journey of life, it is much more about pausing and practicing acceptance of what is. Because keep in mind, as I always quote Danielle Laporte, transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is. And I have seen this alive and well through the stories and the healing journeys and the incredible, incredible testimonials of people all around the world who began this journey when they were on disability, sometimes bedbound, sometimes housebound, sometimes unable to gain any energy or joy for life, and sometimes racked with incredible chronic pain conditions, anxiety, stomach disorders, all sorts of different situations. And I have watched people walk through this process with dignity and grace and come out the other end completely symptom-free and thriving, thriving, thriving. And so I honor all of you guys today. I honor everyone on the journey. I honor someone who today is the first day listening to this podcast, and I honor everyone out there who has taken the chance to open their minds just a little bit wider and invite in an idea and a theory and a possibility with curiosity and not fear, which of course is really hard to do, but can be the beginning of so many good things. And so I honor all of you guys today, and I thank you for your support of this podcast and showing up week after week, getting us to 2 million. And I hope you enjoy this reprise of Toxic Perfectionism. The topic for today is toxic perfectionism. Whoa, what a huge one. So let me give a little background to why I thought this was important to discuss. First of all, let it be noted that there are three facets to my work, helping people rid themselves of chronic pain and conditions. The first is believe, the second is do the work, and the third is patience and kindness for yourself. Okay, so when we talk about how to do this work and how to be the best advocate you can for self-healing, the do the work portion is about excavating your repressed emotions, which were repressed out of necessity. That is an adaptive feature of your brain and your nervous system. Repression is necessary, and it reaches the point where it starts to make us sick. You know, what do they say? Your issues are in your tissues. We feel trauma in our bodies. When we repress enough of the things that have happened to us, it begins to make us sick. We either get physical pain, head, neck, shoulder, knee, back, hip, foot, whatever, pain, or we get things like irritable bowel or fibromyalgia or migraine disorder or skin disorders or chronic fatigue or the symptoms of autoimmune disease. So this is what's happening to us as a society. And in order to right that ship and to bring us to a place of equilibrium, to bring our nervous systems from fight or flight to rest and repair, we have to excavate these repressed emotions safely and effectively in a way that our unconscious thoughts become conscious. It doesn't mean you need to change your life. It doesn't mean you have to cut ties with your family or relive your trauma. It just means that you need to know how you feel about things so your brain and your nervous system can stop fighting them and can stop diverting you with symptoms and conditions. So that's the very, very basic tenet of my work. So when we start this journal speak process, this excavation of our repressed emotions, the first thing that I tell people to do, and this is, by the way, all outlined very detailed in my online course, Freedom from Chronic Pain, we make three lists. And this is originally the work of Dr. John Sarno that I have evolved over the years. So these three lists, the headings of these lists are childhood, daily life, and personality. So childhood can be also described as whatever we would call past stressors. So sort of a bulleted list that only needs to mean something to you. It doesn't have to be something that anyone else would understand. Of the things in your childhood or in your past, anything leading up to what you would consider daily life, that you consider something unresolved. And it could be things that you have talked about 100 times in therapy, or it could be things that you have really never talked about, or anywhere in between. So it's a bulleted list, anywhere from the name of everyone in your family, to the concept of money, to the concept of divorce, to the concept of moving house, or bullying, or whatever happened. And then it could be as detailed as that time in the supermarket with my mom in fifth grade. You know, if that means something to you, it goes on the list. So that's the past list. The daily stressors are what you might imagine: your job, your kids, your work, your partner, your money, your car breaking down, your dog being sick, your ailing parents, anything like that. You know, anything that would constitute a stressor in your daily life. And then we move to personality. And the personality list is oftentimes confusing to people. They're like, what do you mean make a list of my personality? So here is where toxic perfectionism fits in. Because there is a classic personality that leads to TMS, which is Dr. Sarno's umbrella term for mind-body illness, which is almost all illness, which is the classic profile of someone who represses a lot of their emotions. And so I'm going to basically describe myself right now and most people that I've ever come across who do this work. You are a perfectionist. You hold yourself to a super high standard. You're your own worst critic. You worry a lot about what other people think of you. It's actually quite important that people think well of you, that people perceive you as a good person with good intentions, that you mean well in the world. It's also important to you how other people feel, which also can lead to codependency. You know, I'm not okay unless you're okay. I live my life making everybody else comfortable. I forego my own needs so other people can get their needs met. These are typical personality characteristics of people who find their way to my work. And that's not all of them. You know, you can really kind of search your personality. I'm resistant to asking for help. I tend toward self-pity. I want so much, but I'm scared to ask for it. I don't think I deserve. There's lots of different things that can be identified as personality characteristics of someone who generally needs as sort of a protective function, to repress a lot of emotions, because all of those things that I just mentioned bring up a lot of feelings. And another typical characteristic of a personality that gets TMS is someone who gets big feelings in the first place. I feel deeply about almost fucking everything. Guys, I'm serious. I love so big. I care so big. I grieve so big. I feel so devastated for other people's sadness and for my children. If I love someone and they're suffering, I can't breathe. I mean, it's just, it's a big feeling kind of world for me. I don't know if you relate. Maybe you do. And so these characteristics in someone's personality leads you to bank a lot of the leftover feelings. So I might feel devastated about the wildfires. And then as I'm watching coverage, and I don't watch too much coverage, you know, I do believe in limiting my news, but even just a little bit of coverage to be informed and to be empathic to the world I watch. And I start picturing these people and their fear and their displacement and their anxiety. And then I think about the animals and forget it. It's like a wall has to go up in front of my brain because I can't go there. I can't go there with the fires and the animals. It makes me so devastated. So what I'm saying is, but those feelings don't just stop because I put up that wall. I might need to get on with my day. So that's why I mean when I say adaptive, like I need to get on with my day so that wall will go up. But those feelings are still happening and they're getting banked in my unconscious emotional reservoir. So if that builds up enough alongside my daily stressors and the stuff from a childhood that's unresolved, that's getting triggered, eventually something's going to happen. I'm going to get a headache. My back's going to get stiff. I'm going to get a stomach thing. My immune system's going to be suppressed. So I'm going to get a cold. You know, not much of this stuff happens to me because I do have a responsible journal speak practice. And I'm also incredibly aware. Journal speak is a language that I speak very fluently as a second language. So it's always kind of operating in the background. I'm always acknowledging what I really feel about things rather than just letting tons of stuff get repressed. And that has more to do with like interaction with friends and family, the way I feel about my kids. And, you know, if all of this feels like a lot to you, do realize that this podcast is just a dip into my work. And there's so many resources for you to learn more. So don't get overwhelmed if all of this feels like, wait, what does she mean? Just go to my website, click on the resources tab. There's so much to learn. So anyway, toxic perfectionism is something that I discuss because I do believe that so many of us suffer from this delusion that not only is it possible to be perfect, but it is preferable. And not only is it preferable to be perfect, it is absolutely necessary. It is the lifeblood of so many people that I must show up in a certain way. I have to present myself in a certain way. I have to perform in a certain way. I have to appear to others that I'm performing in a certain way. And the amount of shame that needs to be repressed from the 24-hour a day, 7-day a week failure that you are, if that is how you, the standard to which you hold yourself, is vast. Because there's no way. There's no way to be perfect. It's not, first of all, possible. Human beings are imperfect creatures. You can just start with the fact that we have to live. We need systems. We need to excrete. We need to sweat. We need to burp. We need to fart. We need to go to the bathroom. We need to get our periods and have all sorts of, you know, bodily functions. Gross. We're not perfect. We're gross. Okay. Just like, can't we just own that? It's the human being is not a perfected figure, you know, and we're not cartoons that can get squished and just stand up again and be fine. We break our bones. We need surgery. We need to get put back together, you know? And so the very nature of perfectionism is a setup in itself. So, you know, I want to talk about the way we breed and nurture toxic perfectionism within us, because I think it's really important to pause and realize, guys, it is a full-on losing battle. You will lose every moment you are trying to be perfect. You've already lost. Look, you just lost. There you go. You lost again. You can't be perfect. And so I think it's important to sort of pause and sit with the concept of it so we can become awake. You know, all therapy of any kind, whether this is your therapy or you go to a therapist or your journal speak is your therapy or you go to, you know, Outward Bound, whatever your therapy is, the whole point of therapy, the goal of therapy, the primary purpose is to create an observational self. So we're not looking to fix you. You're not broken. You don't need to be fixed. You just need a space to pause. So instead of being a complete reaction to your life, that everything that happens to you, you're just like a reflex, you know, you're just like a switch being flipped constantly and you have no control over it. We go to therapy so we can pause and we can have an observational self. So instead of just reacting to my life when someone says something that triggers me, I'm able to pause to see what's happening, to reflect upon myself, to observe and to say, ah, I see. That just hit that tender spot where I don't like to be told what to do because my father was really overbearing. But I can also pause and see that this person before me is not trying to control or manipulate me. They might have a helpful suggestion for me. Okay, I'm checking back in with myself. I still don't like the way it feels, but I'm observing what's going on, and now I have a choice and I can respond instead of react. That is the goal, my friends. There is no perfecting ourselves. There is no fixing anything. There is creating an observational self so we have the power, so we are empowered to pause and make choices in our lives. And that's how we improve relationships. That's how we get abundance in our life because we're not totally sabotaging ourselves all the time. You know, I'm working with people to help lose weight sometimes, people who are struggling with obesity. And when I help them, what I explain to them is, you know, of course diets don't work. And of course, that's why there's a $1 trillion diet industry out there that's failing. But if we can excavate our repressed emotions and create a space of pause and observational self, it can lead to changes in behavior. Because although diets don't work, we do need to change behavior in order to lose weight. You can't eat fast food 5 times a day and never exercise and just be really mentally healthy and lose weight. You just can't. Our pause and our observational self can create a space. And in that space, we can make different choices. And it works for everything because that's how we change. And so when I think about perfectionism, the first thing I think is it's always going to be a natural tendency to me, for me. It's always going to be my go-to to want to show up as an unflawed being. So let's start with where that began. Because I was talking to a colleague the other day and she was sharing with me about her upbringing and about her military father and how she was the first child and a girl and he really wanted a boy. And so that became a source of shame for her because it was made very clear to her that they were supposed to have a boy. So it started there. And so no matter how perfect she was as a girl, she was not going to make herself a boy and her father would be disappointed regardless. So it started there, but it just kind of grew from there where he wanted her to get excellent grades and he wanted her to be an excellent athlete and he wanted her to show up a certain way as a young lady. And she was just describing to me the rigor of her childhood, which I relate to a lot because although it wasn't exactly like that with my dad definitely would require certain things of me and there'd be so much disappointment and discontent coming from him when I didn't deliver. So the first thing I want to say about your toxic perfectionism is you're not making it up. It's in the fertilizer of the soil in which you are grown, I'm sure. I'm sure you didn't wake up one day and say, I'm a failure if I'm not perfect. I'm sure there was some influence in your life. And even if it was a self-imposed influence as a young child, like maybe your parents weren't doing it to you, but you saw that you had a little bit of talent. And when you couldn't, you know, perform on the level that you thought you should, you would shame yourself for it. But whatever happened, it started early. And so by the time we're grown, our toxic perfectionism, our perfectionism as children becomes toxic. And the reason it becomes toxic is because of this death by 1,000 paper cuts, this constant mini failures that happen all day. I mean, I am really much better, so I don't want to paint this picture as really dire for me personally because I've done so much work around this and I have such a strong observational self.
But I will tell you that just looking in the mirror, I have failed. And it's funny because I've had body image issues my entire life. I have always decided that a good way to control the way people saw me was to control my weight. And which is funny because a lot of times I would just go on and hate myself for it, but then not actually control my weight. Like I wasn't always an acting person with an eating disorder. I just keep it all in my head and just hate myself for it, or I did in the past. And so the reason I bring that up is because when I it's like the shape of my body is genetic. Okay. It comes from both of my parents, by the way, so does yours. And when I was a little kid, because I had this obsession around looking a certain way because I think I was so sad and scared that I wasn't going to be able to show up as I needed to for my father and for my peers, and we were always moving and I always needed to be with a new group because I was scared I could never do it. I figured logically, oh, make your body perfect and then everybody will like you. You know, it's like a little kid thing to think. And so I used to think that your body's shape and size had nothing to do with genetics. It just, you weren't working hard enough, which is so silly. So the shape of my body is genetic. So Tiffany said to me recently, because I don't even know if I was complaining, but I think I just said, God, you know, no matter how much exercise, I'm never going to get rid of this or something. And she said, I just think you don't like the shape of your body. And I'm kind of like, I thought about it and I thought, I actually don't hate the shape of my body, but I know what she means because I spent my whole childhood looking at certain kinds of girls, these long, lanky girls with no hips and no thighs, and thinking, if I just ate one less meal or if I just exercised a little bit more, I would look like her because I'm failing at looking like her. Where, duh, no, I'm never going to look like that. I come from the shape that I come from. I can't look like that. My body can't go there without being incredibly unhealthy. And even then, it wouldn't look like that. So there is a possibility that you are feeling like a failure just by looking in the mirror in the morning, just by looking at your hair or your nose or your skin tone or the shape of your butt and being like, fuck, I failed. And guys, listen, this is toxic perfectionism, because if you are dealing with any sort of chronic pain or condition, and you probably are if you're listening to my podcast, that requires you to dump a ladle of repression, of anger and shame and sadness and fear into your reservoir every time you look in the mirror. So we need to be awake. I'm not saying that just listening to this podcast and knowing that you're doing it is going to solve the problem, but it's part of the solution, because that's how we create an observational self. Because now when I look in the mirror and I see the shape of my thighs, instead of going right to I hate myself and having that be such a big feeling that it has to get dumped in the reservoir, I go, yeah, I see what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing, because when I was little, I really, really felt that I needed to look a certain way in order to survive. I know now that was never true. I know that that is not true for me today. So I see what's natural for me. I'm watching. I'm seeing that I'm tempted to judge my body. I don't need to do that today. I look like I look, and there I am, and I'm looking pretty good. It's all right. And honestly, that line of thinking saves me from like three cups of feelings into the emotional reservoir a day. Like, it's, this is what we're looking toward. We're looking toward calling out our perfectionism for what it is, and realizing in calling it out, we have the power to circumvent this natural process of shame. So this can work in lots of different areas. It's not just about how you look. So you're at work and your boss says, okay, I need this document, right? So you write the document and you read it over and you're like, ah, it's not that great. So you rewrite the document and now it's the deadline. And so you hand in the document. Now you're back at your desk and all you're thinking is, God damn it. Now, I know it wasn't good enough. I could have, if I had just had one more go at it, and did I have a typo in there? And then you look and there is a typo in there and your whole brain starts going haywire. God, I look so stupid. And it's not just a regular typo. It looks like I used the wrong tense or I used incorrect English. And oh God, why did you? Guys, listen. Listen to me. Listen, Linda. You are not going to be able to ever reread something enough to get it absolutely perfect. And even if it was perfect in your eyes, the person who you are submitting it to might have changes because they just had a different expectation of what they wanted. We have to pause and we have to realize, I see what I'm doing. This is what I do to myself. I give myself such a hard time because this is not about this document. This is about the time in sixth grade when my teacher shamed me in front of the class for not having the correct, you know, verbiage in my essay. And it was, I feel it like a mark. I feel it like a scar that never left my knee because I fell on it. Like, I feel that and I feel like it's still affecting me today. And although it sounds silly, and I know consciously it sounds silly, in that moment, sitting at your desk, berating yourself for the mistake, you're trying to go back and fix that little kid in sixth grade. There's part of you that feels like if you could just go back and have that incident have not happened, you wouldn't be the person you are today with the problems you have today. That's what you think somewhere in there. It's unconscious, but you think it. And that's why we get into relationships with people that represent failed relationships in the past, whether it be with our parents or our siblings or an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend from high school. You're looking to mend something that happened by extra trying today with someone else. Guys, it doesn't work. It not only does it not work, it creates self-consciousness and self-doubt in ourselves because we're like, what's wrong with me? It's not working. So it's just super important through your journal speak practice to call out the parts of yourself that potentially are causing you conflict, to list out these personality characteristics, and then to explore them. So what do we do in the journal speak practice? We put something down on the top of the page like toxic perfectionism or a perfectionistic tendency. I'm not saying you have to label it anything, just call it out for what it is. You put 20 minutes on your timer and you write. And you write from the space of a 5-year-old child really speaking the truth. Sometimes that's a tantrum. Sometimes that's an angry tirade. Sometimes that's a sobbing tirade. Sometimes that's a flippant kind of, I don't care about your opinion tirade. And sometimes it's all of the above or anything else. As long as it is unscripted and unpoliced by your grown-up ego that says, write it perfectly, or give people the benefit of the doubt, or look at everyone's perspective. No, I don't want you to look at everyone's perspective in your journal speak. I want you to tell the story as it flippin' happened for you with all of its glory. Who did you wrong? Why you were right? Why you hate everybody? Why you wish that this person was dead or that never happened? Tell it raw, because I'm going to tell you guys something. And if those of you who have experienced it are nodding your heads vigorously right now. When you get out that raw, ugly, disgusting cancer of your repressed rage, it dissipates. It gets gentle. Now you don't have to spend all your energy repressing it anymore. And so you can say, oh my goodness, that's why I was trying to be so perfect. Jesus, oh my God, I didn't know all that was in there. Then you get space. And within space, you get choices. And guys, especially in the age of global warming and global pandemic and racial injustice and so many challenges of our polarized society, choices are the only thing we've got. We can choose how we behave. We can choose how we show up for other people. We can choose how we treat ourselves. We can choose how we pause and care for ourselves and draw boundaries. That's all we get. We can't control the world. God knows it is on a runaway train and it's going to take us where we're going. And I'm sure we will look back at this time in our society and our global timeline, and we'll know that we needed it. We needed it for something. We needed to lance the wound. We needed to wake up. We needed shit to rise to the surface. And God knows it is happening. But this is the time we need choices. We need empowerment. We need to control the only thing we can control, which is ourselves and our actions in this world. And remember that transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is. And so if we're fighting everything and everyone and we're spending all our energy wishing that what is was not, We get no choices, none. Acceptance, breathe. I don't like what's going on right now, but there's nothing I can do to change it. So pause and say, okay, so here we are. Now what needs to be done? And that's when we get the space to do whatever is the next right considered action for us at the time. And that could be any number of things. Something as simple as, I'm going to get up, I'm going to put my feet on the floor, I'm going to make my bed, and I'm going to go get some fresh air. That's what I just need to do right now. I don't know what's next, but that's what I need to do right now because my head is spinning. I woke up with all this stress and all this grief. Okay, so instead of sitting in the stress and the grief, you've just radically accepted that you woke up with stress and grief. You've put your feet on the floor. You've taken care of your body. You've gotten your hot drink and you're sitting outside. Okay. Okay. What's next? You've radically accepted that you're sitting outside, not knowing to do what to do next. Let me think, what do I need right now? Well, I know I haven't done my taxes. I really don't want to do my taxes. The next thing, radically accept. I see how I feel. I don't want to do them. Okay. That's how you feel. You don't want to do them. Well, do you want to feel better today? I do. I would. Okay. How about let's spend 1 hour looking at the taxes? Next right considered action. Within the next few days, the taxes are done. And now you move on to the next thing that's pissing you off or bugging you or causing you grief. But the point is, the only way to make change in your life is to act. And how do we act? We act because we have choices. And how do we have choices? Because we create our observational self. Guys, I know this is a lot. And I know this is hard. But this is the work. This is the work because now the prize at the end of all this conversation is that within this space of choice, even in a challenging world, there are so many opportunities for joy. So many. I am the first person to feel negative when I need to feel negative. And I'm the first person to say, I hate everything and everyone. I just want to crawl into a hole. I don't lie about that. But once I express it, I get it out. I open my eyes and I say, what's there to do? What can we do? And I do something. And I hug someone. And I sit with someone. And I help someone. And then I have these moments of incredible joy, incredible gratitude. Amazing, amazing the privilege to sit with another human being and share my story and have them share theirs. So such a gift, such a privilege. So that is my message to you today. I hope that it helps you. I know it will. It will help you because you're going to let it help you and you can do this. You can do this. Like my inspiration, Glennon Doyle says, we can do hard things. I love you, Glennon, wherever you are out there. All right, guys. Well, it's been such a pleasure being with you guys today. I send you big love. I send you light. And I ask only that if this podcast is helping you, if it makes you feel a little warm, if it makes you motivated to change your life in any small way, if you wouldn't mind going over to iTunes and rating and reviewing it, it helps people find the podcast. And so many people need this work. Everyone, every human being needs this work, obviously, but so many people in chronic pain are in desperate need of this work. So please help me in spreading that message. All right, guys, this has been Nicole Sachs with The Cure for Chronic Pain. I will see you next week. Bye-bye.